When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to Stone Cold Shows. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Go follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan 975. On today's episode, the Astros may be the walking wounded, but they're still healthy enough to push a broom as the Silver Boot stays in Houston another year. Speaking of boots, Jordan's in one, which is just the latest obstacle between Houston and the division title. The Hot Mariners are on deck. We'll preview that series and see SCA what happens. See what I did there? Charlie, Josh, welcome in. It was a daunting task going into this series facing Leiter, Kelly, and DeGrom. The Astros countering with Alexander, bullpen game, and Javier. The arms did enough for Houston, albeit dicey at times. And the offense hung 17 runs on a Rangers team that's also shorthanded and hobbled, but were pesky nonetheless. Charlie, as is the tradition, we start with you. What were your thoughts on the decisive leg of the Silver Boot series?
It's a results-oriented business, and, you know, it's only half the job for the week, but it actually creates a little breathing room. I mean, what an awesome showdown looming with the Mariners, whether dead even, Astros up one. Winner of the series is the favorite to win the division, right? Obviously, if either sweeps, it's command position, but two out of three, you're in first place. You have the tiebreaker going to the final six games of the season. Rangers dead in the water. I guess credit to them for their pluck, for all of the Sturm and Drang, and rightfully so here with the Astros' puny offense for so much of the season. My goodness, the lineups that the Rangers trotted out against the Astros. You know, if it was sumo wrestling, having Jock Peterson and Rowdy Tellez right in the middle of it, Rangers might have had a better chance. But the Astros' offense had to stand and deliver, and it did against Merrill Kelly, who'd pitched very well for the Rangers since being a deadline acquisition from Arizona. And then they got to Jacob DeGrom multiply with the long ball, Jose Altuve's biggest hit in months. Jeremy Pena coming very much alive after having faded from about 325 to sub-300. Well, he takes 305 into the Mariner series on base constantly the last two games of the series. So it's a very good, feel-good time, especially with the Mariners blowing a game on Wednesday night. The Astros know the worst they can go into the series is tied for first place with Seattle, but it's two out of three falls in old-school wrestling terminology there for you, Brandon. Whoever takes the series, it's not the last laugh, but it's the definite upper hand going to the final lap of the race next week.
Yeah, my big takeaways were you got the big hits when you needed them. The offense continued to score some runs. You're getting five or six runs. You can deal with that, right? And so you got run production. You have your pitchers doing a good job. They roll the dice on the back of their rotation. You go through Alexander and Blue Ball and Gordon and Javier, and you manage to get the sweep. Save your top three guys for the next series. I also think it's nice to point out they did win the Braves series before this series. So two series wins in a row, maybe starting to build a little bit of momentum. And then for me, as far as the offense, it was all about the top of the order coming through in this series. Jeremy Pena, seven hits in this series. Correa, five hits in this series. Now, Altuve only had two but he had four RBIs. So when he had the hits, they were big. So to me, that was a big, big, crucial thing for the Astros. Get guys on base. Turn this order. Stop chasing balls in the dirt. And you saw that against DeGrom. They were much more selective than I expected them to be. I thought his location was a little off, too. I think that played part of it. But I was impressed with the Astros' ability, especially a guy like Yiner Diaz picking up that big RBI, two RBI hit there early in the game. You know, he's a guy that'll chase all over. And against DeGrom, for him to actually square one up there down in the count, that was big to get that early lead in this game. And of course the bullpen, you didn't have all your normal guys, but they got the job done. So just typical Astros, Altuve, when it matters, these guys step up.
Little things can always mean a lot, but this time of year in this specific race, and then there's the wild card race, and oh, by the way, the race for the second seed and bye, which is renewed for the Astros and Mariners, both with the Detroit Tigers ship listing terribly all of a sudden. But they put DeGrom on the rack in the first inning Wednesday, a 35-pitch first inning. And I say little things mean a lot. If the roles had been reversed from an Astros perspective, there'd have been a whole bunch of people screaming, holy hell. Caratini was struck out, right? The 3-2 pitch caught the zone. How will baseball be different next year when you can call for a review? Caratini gets the walk instead of strike three, out three in the first inning. And then Yiner Diaz puts hard contact on a 2-strike pitch. DeGrom, I'm sure, is saying, why didn't I give him a chance to chase? He chases everything. But Yiner, who can hit the ball so hard, there's so much in him for a chance to be a truly great offensive force. Well, that was a great at bat, a 2-strike hit. And even though it was not a lead, the Astros held the rest of the way, getting off on the right foot against DeGrom, giving Javier a little room to work with. So sweeping away the Rangers. Look, the players could not care less about the silver boot, but for the fans and the marketing departments, this was all about not only averting potential disaster, right? The Rangers had come in here and swept the series. The Astros would be on the critical list. The Rangers had taken 2 out of 3. Astros would have been in serious trouble. Well, the Astros take all 3, and to boot, they keep the silver boot for like the 48th year in a row.
It was a matchup of wild pitching by the starters, and it looked shaky when Javier coughed up the 2-run lead in just a half inning, but he locked in. I think it was 9 consecutive batters retired after that. And Tuesday night was a much larger lead that De Los Santos and Abreu almost gave back. Abreu, we know he's volatile, always can flirt with disaster, usually is able to clean up the mess, but he's had some rocky outings, last several outings. Do you think he can get this together? Is this just a release point thing, or are the innings starting to stack up for Brian?
I reject the idea that he's worn out. If so, then he's not in sufficient shape. Barely going to top 70 innings. You can just hit a little funk. I mean, he was awful in the game on Tuesday and they were able to survive it. He's had multiple shaky outings the last couple of weeks. Maybe there's a little bit of that between the ears. The 3 outs in the 9th inning, they just come with the tougher moments sometimes than getting those setup outs in the 8th inning. I don't know what goes into it, but that he can get back to being brilliant, sure. Now, he's been poor in multiple outings, but his ERA was 157, 165, probably due to have some slippage at some point. I would think mentally and perhaps physically, that he likely wasn't even available Wednesday night. They certainly didn't use him. Then the Astros with the off day Thursday. So 2 full days off for Abreu going into the Mariners series, where unless it goes off the rails, you expect the Astros will want to use him in at least 2 of those 3 games. And then they have another off day coming Monday before 6 straight on the road. So Abreu should have enough in the tank for a finishing kick. It comes down to you do or you don't, you will or you won't.
It does. It's the thing with Abreu is he's not as pinpoint accurate as Josh Hader. He relies a lot on that wicked slider, and it moves so much. It can be hard to to throw for a strike when you need to. But Abreu is also one of those guys where he's kind of like McCullers, where sometimes you feel like he can command his slider better than he can command his fastball. And very often we see Abreu fall in love with his slider when he can throw 99 miles an hour, and guys get a little too, they can just guess slider. I think the other big thing is the walks, especially early in innings. You see that with the Astros every night, and you even saw it in the finale. They just got lucky. That how many times do they walk the leadoff guy? And very often that leadoff guy is like the nine hitter. They did that in the finale as well. And you see that with Abreu also. And he's not a guy that's super fast to home plate. So when he walks that guy, there's a good chance he's getting a second base. So then you give up weak contact or a little bloop or something, and the game's tied if you only have a one-run lead. So I think that's a big thing with Abreu. But as we've talked all year, he's your best option right now. You got to hope for the best and get him out there. And he's got tons of playoff experience. So, you know, these moments shouldn't be too big for him. But, yeah, it is the ninth inning. It's a little different mentally. And it's something he's going to have to adjust to. And we'll see with Hader. We're seeing that it doesn't look like he'll be back in the regular season. Maybe a second series of the postseason. I don't think he's even throwing yet. I don't hold out much hope that Josh Hader is going to come save the Astros this year. I think you're going to have to go with Abreu and all the other guys. But Brian King did a really nice job. Okert scared me, comes out, walks a guy, what I was talking about earlier. But in the end, they got the job done.
I'm Brian King, just to quickly amplify a stat I had not seen that unearthed heading into the series finale. And Josh, you alluded to it. Okert, a very dodgy eighth inning, huge double play ball.
Yeah.
Angles, right? It's not like Langford hit a little dribbler. He hit it on the button, routine double play ball that set up the escape hatch. But it was Brian King who found the trapdoor to get out of the inning with the fly out, two out, two on, tying run at the plate. Brian King now has come in with 22 runners on base during the course of this season. Not one of them has scored. No other reliever in baseball is clean with inherited runners with more than 13 left stranded. Brian King, 22 for 22. That's the definition of perfect.
Yeah, and he does look a lot better. I know there was a time in which, he had lost it a little bit. He seems to be finding it at the right time. So hopefully that trajectory continues. When we're talking about Abreu, it's not like a guy like Okert, where if Okert blows up, you're like, well, he's been good, but you feel like he's been pitching above his head. It feels like a combination of a guy with a certain kind of stuff that the Astros pitching coaches can tinker with and get the most out of him. You weren't expecting this sort of production out of him this season, but with Abreu, that's just a guy who you really need. You talked about Hader not being there. He's the last, outside of Brian King, he's the last vestige of a leverage reliever you have. So you really need that guy to find it. One guy they're not going to find in this next series, Yordan. It's the one-legged elephant in the room. His health and how fleeting it seems to be. He's out for the season, but they are hopeful they can get him back for the postseason, which is just, that's the chorus that's just gets sung so much as of late. Houston's had to do it basically all season, but how do you think the Astros fare closing out the season sans Yordan?
Well, it's the short run. So they could score 19 runs this weekend against the Mariners. They could also score seven. In the short run, predictability, volatility. Josh mentioned earlier, right, the top of the lineup needs to produce. It did in spades against the Rangers, right? If Altuve is sat up in his coffin, what perfect timing for that. Pena the igniter at the top of the lineup. Correa, still taking called third strikes and not driving the ball, pulling the ball with authority. But I think Carlos Correa understands where he is. He is patient and will go the other way and fight in at bats. I haven't been drawing many walks, although he at least has been running deep counts, as we've talked about some. But whether it's in three games or over 162 games, your leadoff hitter, your number three hole hitter, need to be productive if you're going to have a good offense. And Peña, Altuve in those roles, with obviously Yordan not coming back as the cavalry. If he makes it back at all by the end of the regular season, frankly, I'd be surprised. They're holding out hope. That's why they didn't put him on the injured list. Right? You'd have to miss 10 days, and there were 11 days left in the regular season at that point. So they have what they have. It'll either be good enough or they'll come up achingly short. But let's note that going into the Mariners series, the Astros back to 15 games over 500, 84 and 69. So a 6-3 finish, there would be nothing miraculous about that. It would get them to 90 wins, and that absolutely would get them into the postseason in one form or fashion, division winner, probably at 90 or at least as a wild card.
It's going to set him back, Brandon. There's no way around it. Yordan's one of the best hitters in baseball, but it's not like he's been around for most of the year. When they built a lot of this lead, he wasn't here. And there is a possibility, we'll get into this a little later, maybe there's some help coming along the way to help the offense. We'll get into that here in a little bit. So yeah, Charlie's right. You got three series here. It could go any different ways. In baseball, that's so few amount of games. The offense could do great. Since the top of the order took care in the Rangers series, maybe some of the guys in the middle to the bottom of the order can get hot. I know Jesus Sanchez has been struggling, and it'd be nice to see Christian Walker kind of get hot again. But I think with Yordan, to me, it's more of a big picture issue, guys. We just have to think back to last year when he slid into second base, and we didn't even know if we were going to have him for the postseason. And when we did, he wasn't 100% at all. And that was just sliding into the base. And then I think of a few years ago when he was out in left field and he had that scary fall where his knee kind of crumpled and we were terrified. And then we didn't see him playing a whole lot of left field after that. And then you have what happened here where he slips on home plate. I hate to say it. Is he just kind of clumsy? He's a super great athlete, but remember the weird asthma thing in Atlanta where with the fireworks were going off with the smoke and he just has so many, he's like McCullers, but an offensive player, but he's actually on the field more and more productive. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets hit by a champagne cork here in the next couple of weeks. So I'm just in the big picture, guys, I worry. The Correa addition and having Paredes for next year may be very important because we have to enter a real reality here that Yordan may not be a guy that you can really count on at the end of the year going forward. He's just so injury prone. And even if it's not at the end of the year, he's already a guy that misses a good chunk of the season as it is. I don't think that's going to get better as he continues to age and rack up more injuries.
Charlie, where are you at on that? Because that was honestly where I was going to go next on this is just, and I hate to bring that up. I don't want to pour cold water on a positive outcome. Astros sweep the Rangers. So we got positive vibes, but it's a big deal. Is this just a freak occurrence this year? Cause he's never missed this many games. Is this just a freak occurrence or is like Josh saying, is Josh concern valid here that this is headed the wrong direction with Yordan?
Well, as you add lines to the resume of time missed, let's remember, go back to the COVID season. He played two games and then he did knee surgery. He'd have missed the rest of that season. He did play a career high 144 games a year ago. Well, that's looking like the aberration rather than something to build upon. You're going to wind up playing about 40 games the following season. He's 28 years old now. He is a big guy, the bigger parts, but they've been some of these, the whole hand stuff, the chronic hand issues, it's just kind of odd. Some guys can, I suppose, just be star-crossed, but if you miss this much time, the contract that seemed like just a joke of a bargain for the Astros at under $20 million per year, attendance is part of the grade. And Yordan for 2025, it's a D-. Will we see him if the Astros are back in the postseason? But then does he have to ramp back up again, right? It took several games in the minors, and then he got back to the Astros and hit 449 the first 12 games. It wasn't as soon as he was declared healthy, okay, he went in the lineup and just started murdering baseballs. So it's exasperating, but in spite of it all, here they are going into the penultimate weekend of the season in first place. Showdown with the Mariners, and this isn't 2 years ago. It would be, oh geez, kind of wish the series was on the road. Absolutely much better off having home field advantage for the most fundamental reasons. Last licks, right? You're the home team. You come up last. And if you get to extra innings, the import, the value of being the home team, regular season rules with the silliness of the free runner on second base to start it out. So it's just fantastic. Personal opinion, of course. Mine happens to be right on this one. Baseball races, good baseball races down the stretch. No other major league sport can touch them. Team sport, for the drama, the day in, day out intensity, the scoreboard watching that comes with a baseball race. And the Astros and Mariners are in a humdinger. And as I said earlier, you know, if the Tigers are going to continue to falter, oh my goodness, maybe the AL West team winds up with a bye as the second seed. And on the downside, with the Astros sweeping the Rangers and killing them off completely, not just taking the series, even if the Mariners take two out of three and, the Astros are playing the short stack in the division, well, look where Boston is. Cleveland's still two behind in the loss column. The Astros are in a favorable position for the wild card, even if the Seattle series doesn't go swimmingly.
Josh mentioned help possibly being on deck here. And what he's referencing, obviously, is Isak Paredes with the potential to be activated during the Mariners series. Paredes is a guy like Correa that can draw those deep counts. So how much would a returning Paredes help offset the loss of Yordan?
To me, it's all about thump. If he's right, you know he's going to see a lot of pitches. He's going to get on base a lot. He had the highest OPS on the team until he got injured. So if he's right, those Crawford boxes for him, he was your home run guy before he got hurt too. So if there's anybody that can kind of, you know, ease away the possible loss of Yordan on this Astros roster, it's getting back Paredes.
But in three games, we could dig up prime Babe Ruth and he could go 1-for-12 with 8 strikeouts. Sure. We could not have to dig up Brad Ausmus and he could go 7-for-12, right? In the short stretch of games. I will say, as we look to Seattle specifically, I think a bit more pressure on the Astros in the Friday game because Hunter Brown goes. And if you drop the opener with Hunter Brown on the mound, but then maybe Fromber revives his season. But if he doesn't, then wow, Jason Alexander going in the Sunday game. Mariners, however, Hunter Brown or not, if Seattle drops the opener, right? The Mariners have the burden, the weight of all the heartbreak the Astros have administered them in recent years. And Mariner fans will all be looking for ledges. You know, they've won the division since 2001. But the Mariners are going to have three of their horses lined up. All-star Brian Wu in the Friday matchup. George Kirby coming off a 14 strikeout outing Saturday. And then Logan Gilbert, who can be straight up nasty. And going back to where we were at the beginning of the season, even when Yordan was present and accounted for, the lopsided, right-handed hitting nature of the Astros lineup. Wu, Kirby, Gilbert, righty, righty, righty. Back of the Mariners bullpen. Andres Munoz, who at this point, he rates the edge over Brian Abreu off overall performance and recent performance. Nasty righty. Matt Brash is the number one setup man. Hey, gave it up to the Royals Wednesday, but another righty. So the Mariners, all their right-handed pitching. Can the Astros' right-handed lopsided offense do enough? Of course it can. Will it?
We will see. I mentioned that gauntlet of starting pitchers that Houston faced against Texas, and they fared pretty well against those three guys. And then you outlined the battery of Wu, Kirby, and Gilbert they'll be facing in this series against Seattle. Besides scoring more runs, which is obvious, although challenging for this lineup for the reasons that you outlined, Charlie, what are you looking for from Houston specifically to take the series from the M's?
Well, we talked about the top of the Astros lineup and Peña, Correa, Altuve. They need to do the heaviest lifting. Ditto with the Mariners. If not task one, it's pretty high on the list. Keep Cal Raleigh in the ballpark. He's not hitting 230 since the All-Star break, but he's kept pounding home runs. It's really unbelievable that a catcher has set the record now. He passed Mickey Mantle earlier in the week. 56 home runs for Cal Raleigh. He's a switch hitter. He has tremendous opposite field power against a right-handed pitcher. He can hit a pop fly that gets in the Crawford box. He can also go second deck in right field. Against Fromber, you turn him around. You know, Fromber better have that curveball working and better be keeping the ball down in the zone. But they're leading off Randy Arozarena these days. You know, he has some history tormenting the Astros, as does Julio Rodriguez, who, as usual, second half Julio is a hell of a lot better than first half Julio. So that's the 1-2-3 in the Mariners lineup. It would be an oversimplification to say whoever gets the better of the top third of the lineup, Peña, Correa, Altuve versus Arozarena, Raleigh, Julio wins the series, but it's a pretty good leg up for whoever gets the edge.
I'll be curious to see how Joe Espada kind of uses his lefties, as Charlie was pointing out. How's he going to deploy Sanchez? Is Zach Cole going to get some opportunities because he's a left-hander? Caratini has had some clutch hits for this team this year. I know he's a switch hitter, but swings from the left side against these righties. So can the Astros manufacture some left-handed on-base percentage and power to go along with their top of their lineup and try and offset those dominant right-handed starters for the Mariners?
Let's note Merrill Kelly, Jacob deGrom, right-handed starters for the Rangers, and the Astros got to both. And Seattle, whether it had a stretch of the yips on the road, they were having a brutal road trip before winning two out of three in Atlanta to stop the bleeding, just as the Astros won 2 out of 3 in Atlanta to stop some bleeding. But their starting pitchers, almost to a man, have been way better this season in pitcher-friendly T-Mobile Park than they have been on the road. Obviously, Daikin Park, a much more home run friendly hitter haven than things are up in Seattle. So, look, it's a 3-game series. It's a heavyweight fight. These two teams are not Ali Frazier at their peak, but they're battling for the heavyweight championship of the American League West, and this should just be great. I hope they're 3 tremendously close games.
I don't. I hope the Astros
cruise in the next laughing.
I get it. I hope they sweep them in a laugher. For me, I think my focus is really going to be on the bullpen because of how volatile the starters have been. Oakert needs to keep up his production. They've got a guy in Blue Ball that's really come out and shown that he can put long stretches of relief together for this team and put zeros up. Hopefully they don't need him to piggyback anybody in this series, but it's nice to know they have that. Should someone come unraveled, he's been a breath of fresh air for that bullpen. And then the back end of the rotation, the leverage guys, they need to lock in and be able to hold leads if they have one. So that's what I'll be looking for. Final thoughts before we jump out.
Just on AJ Blueball, you know, could he loom as a huge factor? A guy who was terrible in the minor leagues most of the season, by the way. He's been fabulous in his 20-some-odd innings with the Astros. With the off day Thursday and another off day coming Monday, they will not need a fifth starter until the next-to-last day of the season, a week from Saturday. So they can aggressively and for multi-innings deploy Blue Ball. If, say, Framber really struggles and you want to go quick hook as early as the third inning, or heaven forbid, Hunter Brown's 102 pitches and he's only gone 5 1/3, right? Hunter Brown, last two starts, 107, 108 pitches is 2 max pitch counts for the season. But Blue Ball as their best multi-inning bullpen threat, I'm not saying you can pitch him 3 innings Saturday and bring him back for another 4 innings on Tuesday if you need him, but there's absolutely the chance to have him go several innings in a game as necessary and not jeopardize his availability as a starter, you know, and have to go Jaden Murray full-on bullpen game when that Saturday game against the Angels rolls around and could have huge stakes attached to it.
For me, I'll just be hoping that the off day really helps the Astros just kind of recharge. And it's a home off day. So on the broadcast, I think they said they hadn't had a home off day since way back in August. So I think it'll be good for these guys to kind of sleep in their own beds, be around their families, coming off a nice sweep of the Rangers. Now focus all our attention on taking care of business. Let's go out there and beat the Mariners and finish this thing out.
Yeah, it's been a volatile season from being 20 games over 500 to having one of the worst records in baseball over a 2-month span. I'm interested if Houston can recapture some magic in this final stretch. Josh talked about being in this position and getting hot at the right time. Can the Astros get hot at the exact right time and really make a strong closing stretch that can really instill some confidence, some much needed confidence in this team? I know they're veterans. I know they've been through the wars, but they know their struggles at the plate. This is a great momentum boost coming out of the Rangers series. Can they keep that momentum? Can they finish strong at the end of the season and make themselves look like a contender? And then all these guys that could be returning, I think that becomes that much more meaningful. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts on apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. And as always, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.